Welcome to Our Cover Crops for You. This is the third podcast from the Midwest Cover Crops Council. I'm your host, Anna Morrow, and this is a podcast of short interviews with farmers and specialists about solving problems on the farm and how cover crops can be a part of the solution. Today, I interview Erin Hiramoto, who's a professor at the University of Kentucky, and she'll discuss with us some of the benefits of using cover crops to reduce weed populations, and especially reducing the population of herbicide-resistant mare's tail.
I am in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences, and within that department, I am in the weed science group. So I've been at the University of Kentucky since the fall of 2014. So I'm just wrapping up my fourth year of cover crop research there, my fourth cover crop season, and about to enter my fourth cash crop season. So I work mostly with weed management in row crops, corn, soybean. We grow a lot of tobacco in Kentucky too. So we do a lot of research on weed management in tobacco. Almost all of my research focuses on the use of cover crops for weed management. I do a lot of research on how cover crops influence weed emergence, weed growth, and also looking at how weed biology. So we have a lot of problems with mare's tail or horseweed, some people might know it as. So I have one larger project in conjunction with Illinois, Kansas, and Missouri. We're looking at factors that influence the germination and emergence of this weed, for example. So when does it come up, in the spring or in the fall? What factors contribute to its overwintering success? And then based on that information, how we can better use cover crops to manage that weed. And then I do a lot of research as well with integrating cover crops and herbicide use for managing weeds in those various crops. I do a little bit of research on how grazing cover crops or using cover crops as forages influences weed management potential too, particularly use of how removing cover crop biomass affects or doesn't affect using soil residual herbicides and their efficacy.
So what's the biggest impact you think cover crops can have on weed suppression?
So there are two main ways that we think about cover crops influencing weeds. So while cover crops are growing, they're going to be out competing weeds and also suppressing their emergence. So while the cover crop is growing, so if you're planting something in the fall, it grows through the fall, over the winter, into the following spring. It keeps light away from the soil surface, so any weed seeds that need light to be able to germinate, they don't get that light, so they can't germinate. And then the cover crop is just crowding, using up space, using up resources that weed seeds can need to germinate, and then also weeds need to grow. So while the cover crop is growing, again, it suppresses germination, keeps weeds from emerging in the first place, so it reduces the density, and then if weeds do successfully germinate and emerge, the cover crop, just by using up resources, keeps those smaller. So we have fewer weeds while the cover crop is growing, and then the weeds that are there are smaller as well. So generally, if you plant a cover crop, the more cover crop biomass you have come spring when you go to terminate it, the less winter annual weed biomass you'll have in that. And some people ask, like, well, do I need to manage my winter annual weeds? So for us, our winter annuals in corn soybean rotations will be common chickweed, henbit, purple dead nettle, our main ones. We can have dandelion too, because we're a big no-till state. So we have some of those perennials. We can have winter annual grasses like Poa annua or annual bluegrass. So there are a few reasons to use cover crops instead of keeping winter annual weeds around. And so some of those are related to the fact that our winter annual weeds have really complex seed dormancy mechanisms. So even if they're not going to be competing, if you're just growing corn and soybeans and they don't compete with your crop, they're still producing seeds. And those seeds have really complex dormancy mechanisms, and they can live for a long time. So the winter annuals will just keep going to seed. That seed will live for decades and have unpredictable times when it will, or unpredictable what years it will emerge. If you do have wheat in your rotation, those weeds will be problematic in wheat. Now, we have herbicides to take care of them in wheat, but we also have some emerging resistance issues with common chickweed. And so generally, again, if we can be using cultural practices to be reducing the number of seeds in the soil seed bank, that's just a benefit rather than having to rely on our herbicides And then another reason to control our winter annuals is that we have mare's tail. I mentioned that earlier. For us, it can come up in the fall. It can come up in the spring. It can come up in the winter. It can come up in the summer. It seems to emerge all the time. So if we do have fall emerging mare's tail, we can, suppress that emergence with cover crops and then keep the plants smaller that do successfully emerge. So those are two reasons to manage winter annuals. In general, too, if you're concerned about nitrate immobilization in the fall, holding soil in place, those weeds tend to not be as deep-rooted, so they're not as good at serving those functions as cover crops will be. So it's generally better to have something that is a little bit more predictable in the way it behaves, like a cover crop, than using those winter annual weeds as your cover crop. So the cover crops also will be out-competing early emerging summer annuals. In Kentucky, we're a little far south. We actually have had a pretty harsh winter this year, but I was out scouting on February 26th and saw my first common lamb's quarter seedlings and my first giant ragweed seedlings for the year. So those are summer annuals that are going to be problematic in corn and soybeans. We were seeing those not in our cover crop plots. We can be suppressing emergence of those, again, by having those good cover crop stands in February, and we have fewer of those around that we have to kill with our soybeans. And we do also, we have glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed, a couple different biotypes in Kentucky, and I know that's a big problem in the north central Midwest region as well. So growing cover crops prevent weed emergence, outcompete weeds that have emerged. And then the other way generally that cover crops help to suppress weeds is after you kill the cover crop, the residue that's left can suppress weed emergence and suppress weed growth as well. So if you practice no-till, like a lot of our growers in Kentucky, that residue from the terminated cover crop will form a mulch on the soil surface. And so it has a pretty strong physical impact in preventing weeds from emerging. So again, reducing light penetration to the soil surface. So a lot of our weeds, like our pigweed, they need light to germinate and specific wavelengths of light too. So if you're reducing the penetration of light to the soil surface, fewer of those seeds can germinate. It's just a physical barrier. Think about how tiny those small weed seedlings are. It takes a lot of work for them to get through a thick cover crop layer. So it's another way that the physical mulch layer can be suppressing them, whereas our crop seedlings are much bigger, beefier, better able to get through those residue layers. Plus, we give them a little bit of an advantage when we clean out a little bit of a furrow in no-till. The residues, too, if we're planting like a cereal rye or wheat, they're going to be tying up nitrogen as well. And so if we think about using a starter, placing starter with the corn seed, for example, or soybean seed that fixes its own nitrogen, we don't need to worry about early season nitrogen immobilization as much. But if you're a really tiny weed seed, a really tiny weed seedling, that early season nitrogen immobilization that we can see following those small grain cover crops can really set their growth back by quite a bit. That's a way that we can use residues. If you are using tillage and are incorporating those residues into the soil when you plant or before you plant, in general, they can affect the seed-soil contact, again, of some of our smaller seeded weeds, especially in tilled systems, depending on when you incorporate the residue and on what type of cover crop you're using. Allelopathy can be a factor, and generally, allelopathy targets smaller seeds more than it targets larger seeds. Like smaller seeded weeds like pigweed and common lamb's quarters more than corn or soybeans. This allelopathy is another reason that we recommend waiting 2 or 3 weeks between terminating cover crops and planting cash crops, just as a side note. There's some evidence, too, that incorporating cover crop residues might lead to increases in seedling diseases that might target small seeded weeds more so than our larger seeded crops. So some things like Pythium and Rhizoctonia, too. That can clearly be problems for crops. It's something that we've been discussing here at this conference today, how you avoid damaging crops, but can be targeting weeds too. It's an active area of research. Again, seed size plays a role, as does some protective seed treatments as well, and potentially the use of in-furrow protectants and some other cultural practices too. So lots of ways that cover crops can influence weeds. And we have a lot of research and actually throughout the United States that are working on using cover crops for weed management now. It's a very powerful way to improve the efficacy of our herbicides, increase their longevity, make them more effective, and then also reduce the number of weeds that we have to be killing with our herbicides. which is just going to help make them more effective in the long run as we have fewer weeds to kill, forestall the development of resistance.
So I know a lot of people really struggle with mare's tail. What have been your specific results with your mare's tail research?
Yeah, so we have some really interesting results. We have a couple unique places we can study some glyphosate-resistant populations of mare's tail, and we set up an experiment in the fall of 2016 to be looking at a fall-emerged population, which we in Kentucky are right on the border sometimes of whether it does emerge in the fall or in the spring. And so we planted, well, we didn't plant. We let a patch of mare's tail go to seed, so we did have a bunch of fall-emerged seedlings. Planted a cover crop, also did some fall burn down treatments too to try to kill the mare's tail. And then this is a all combinations type of experiment. So we had plots with cereal rye and or fall applications of a PPO inhibitor herbicide and or applications of spring growth regulator herbicides. What we found is, yes, the fall application of an herbicide was very effective in killing all of the emerged plants in the fall, but it does not have any residual activity into the following spring. So by the time the seeds started to emerge in March, April for us, there was nothing left to keep those from coming up. Where we had the cover crop by itself, so without that fall application of herbicide, we saw a pretty steep decline in the number of plants that were left. The cover crop never quite brought the density down to zero, but in combination with just one herbicide application in the spring, we were able to bring the density of those plants down to zero. So anytime we were using herbicides alone, not herbicides without any residual activity, we weren't able to eliminate that spring emerging flush of mare's tail. But the cover crop residue was able to suppress those spring emerging plants. So in terms of the timing of fall emerging plants, mare's tail plants, spring emerging mare's tail plants, and our soybean planting, desired soybean planting time in early May, we think that we're working on whether the fall timing or the spring timing works better, and it might depend on the year and when your mare's tail is going to emerge that year, which again we're trying to better predict based on soil temperature and soil moisture, snow cover, etc. But we think we might be able to provide some recommendations in terms of a combination of a cover crop and just one herbicide application instead of having to treat it multiple times. And so the reason that you might have to treat it multiple times is that if you do have plants coming up in the fall, some other folks' research have shown coming out of various areas in the Midwest that it is much harder to kill in the spring. So if your plants come up in the fall, they overwinter and you try to kill them off early the following spring, the herbicides are not as effective, basically. So if you do have fall emerging stuff, it's important to kill it off in the fall so you don't end up with that situation in the spring where you'll have some survivors.
Although it wasn't part of the experiment, how do you think cover crops would compare to a fall applied residual?
Yeah, so that's a good question about fall residual herbicide products, and this is getting a little bit out of my area of expertise, but one concern I would have is just in terms of how long that would last. Persistence of these residual compounds ends up being a function of the compound itself, the soil type, moisture, pH of the soil, temperature, a lot of different factors. If growers also have things like Palmer amaranth and water hemp in their fields, we might be using one or two applications of these soil residual herbicides in the crop itself too. And so there's definitely can be a situation where, depending on the chemistry and on the desired crops in the rotation, you might be bumping up against maximum use rates within a given year. While it is a best management practice to be using as many modes of action within a given year to just make sure that we're killing all of the weeds that we need to be killing, if we have cultural practices that we can use that are also effective, oftentimes those are going to be preferable. And cover crops, you know, they're not without their risks, and they're not without their costs. So it is something that needs to be balanced. But for growers with really heavy infestations of fall mare's tail, a fall cereal rye cover crop might be really beneficial, and not just helping to bring that population down, keeping those plants smaller over the winter, or going into the following spring, so they're easier to kill the following spring, but also in just providing a residue that's going to keep additional plants from emerging that following spring. So it might be able to substitute for a couple different applications to manage that one population.
Well, thank you, Erin.
Yes, thank you, Anna.
Thanks for joining me on Our Cover Crops for You, a podcast by the Midwest Cover Crops Council. I want to once again thank Erin Hiramoto for her time today in this interview. It's really great to hear about all the ways that cover crops are able to help suppress weed populations in our crop fields. Make sure to join me next time when I interview Mike Starkey, who's a farmer in Indiana. He's an advanced cover cropper who has some really good insight on the long-term benefits of cover crops. In the meantime, check out our website, mccc.msu.edu, for any cover crop publications that you might be looking for, and I'll talk to you next time.